Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're standing by for a recording with Matt Hicks from 1070. The Fan AM Indianapolis is going to be talking about IndyCar and going to be talking maybe a little bit about the Pacers if we can fit that in to air on 517. So we are standing by for Matt to call us. I have sent him a Facebook message. Ready when you are, sir. So we shall see. We shall see. Any day now. Waiting on Matt Hicks to call. Test, test, test. And we're still waiting for a call from Matt Hicks. Let me talk a little bit. There he is, sir. How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Rocking and rolling, man. Living the dream. Never better. Never better.
I'm actually on my way down to Emmett's right now to do sports talk with Bob.
Oh, well, we'll whip this out.
I've got plenty of time.
Okay. Excuse me while I whip this out. The best line in any movie ever. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah.
Well, we're just going to talk some IndyCar, of course, about the new qualification rules and talk about the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Man, brain fart difference.
Oh,
dude, were you there at that race?
No, I didn't make it. I ended up having stuff to do for my other job, but I came home and watched it. I did the DVR thing, so I started it late, and I didn't look at the internet, didn't look at anything, and I'm like sitting here stunned that they couldn't figure out how to complete a restart. It was like, oh my God.
Unbelievable. Well, I was standing right there, down there by the pit area, and not too far from where Mayor Ballard was. So I was trying to get some pictures of him and grab him when he come off of there. And there was a bunch of us standing there. And then Sabra, who was the pole setter?
Savedra, yeah.
Savedra's car stalled. And I was like, whoa! And then Ryan Hunter-Reay went around.
But see, when the pole sitter stalls, I thought they would have thrown a quick yellow and just said, okay, yellow flag, and now we'll do a flying restart.
Oh, my God.
We tried to do the standing start, and I can't believe they went through.
I heard, was it Kevin Lee or Donald Davison say, they don't. That this is just a speculation, but that could go down as the worst wreck, one of the worst wrecks at Indianapolis Motor Speedway that didn't involve a death.
I would say that, yeah, I didn't hear that, but that sounds, off the top of my head, that sounds about right. I mean, it was horrifying looking. It looked about as bad. Was it Hornish that hit the attenuator and, like, his car, like, blew apart? He thought, oh, my God, Hornish is dead.
Yeah,
and he was.
He
was okay. Terrible. That was another one, too. It looked horrible.
When you saw the replay, the nose piece was just inches
I know it. And I can't believe his legs didn't get all screwed up. I mean, he's lucky guy.
Really crazy. All right, well, we'll just do a quick countdown, and I'll just jump right into it as if you'd called it. Okay?
Okay, cool. Thanks, man.
All right, we'll do it in 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Al Marcos, El Presidente. Saturday morning, the day after a not-so-fast Friday. But joining us now is the one, the only, Mr. Matt Hicks, from 1070, the Fan, who's going to help us break all this down, some of the new rules, some of the new action that we've seen out here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now, Matt, we were talking a little bit off mic about that. We'll talk about this first because it was the first race, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. And, you know, obviously right off, one of the things that we seen right off was the fact that IndyCar could not get a restart together, and what a very scary wreck that was. And I was just sharing with you a little bit of how close I was to that. And I've never been – I was telling Rich Nye over at Channel 13 the other day at the track. I said, you know, I've never been that close to a wreck before. I've always been that guy that's been on the other side of the track or saw it on the monitors. That's a bad wreck. I've always wanted to see a bad wreck. I've had my feel for the lifetime there, Matt.
Yeah, when the parts start whizzing by your head, you think, okay, I'd belong back at the media center now. Yeah, I hear you there. And, yeah, I mean, it was just a weird thing. IndyCar has had some problems over the years of figuring out where to have a restart zone, and they want to have it very late, and that, of course, causes a lot of excitement, but it also causes a lot of damage to the owner's pocketbooks, and that's exactly what happened last Saturday. And I think Graham Rahal said it best. I believe it was Graham. The restart zone was just way too late. They needed to let the leaders go sooner. Yes, I understand. It would have stretched the field out a little bit. But the reality of it was borderline embarrassing that they could not get a restart off without having another wreck. And it really was simply not the fault of an over-aggressive driver or anything of the sort. It really was simply the fault of lack of vision down the field. So you couldn't tell when somebody was having a problem because the front stretch that they were on, yes, going the wrong way, but they were on the flat front stretch, so you just don't have that ability to see too far in front of you. So it was, say, a lucky happenstance that no one was seriously injured beyond who was hurt. I mean, James Hinchcliffe missed the week of practice, and I think everybody else made it through relatively unscathed. But a testament to the Dallara, the DW12 car, apparently doing what it was meant to do and keeping these guys safe.
Well, keeping them safe, but certainly I think they're going to have to reevaluate who does honorary starts on the track anymore. Mayor Ballard, I think, got his feel too, and he's a combat veteran, and he goes even that freaked me out, good thing everybody came out okay, and good to see James Hinchcliffe back out on the track yesterday. It wasn't a very fast Friday at all. Let me ask you this real quick before we get into the Indianapolis 500 and the qualifying and all that stuff. Did the fans get what they wanted out of the Grand Prix of Indianapolis?
Well, listen, I tell you what, I don't know if it was Doug Bowles or who came up with the race distance amount, but they did an outstanding job of picking the number of laps because it was drama-filled the last three laps. You really didn't know who was going to win the race, and I think I was kind of, you know, we don't do this in the media, but I'm kind of half media, half fan, really.
Sure,
I was rooting
sure.
A little bit
we all are.
Castroneves. Well, sure, and I was rooting for Elio Castroneves. I am really interested to see the historical event that will take place at some point. It's going to happen eventually, where a driver is able to win a race in more than one discipline at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's going to happen, and I thought Elio might be the first guy to win more than one event at the Speedway, and it didn't quite happen, but the fuel race was quite entertaining, and I think it did give fans what they wanted to see. There were three, four, or five legitimate passing zones?
Oh, yeah.
And it was, I think it was a very entertaining race, and apparently the Speedway's happy with the attendance, so we will likely see it again next year at the beginning of May.
Well, you know, you were talking about two winners at two different races at the same track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Simon Patajon has been putting up some good speeds, and Ryan Hunter-Reay has been there as well. And, you know, talking about fuel management, there was no more fuel for Simon Pagenaud to win that race. Had it been any longer, Ryan Hunter-Reay would have won that race, and you know, Elio Castroneves was right there as well. So you know, I was thrilled, I was excited to watch it, and you know, it's very interesting to see two different. What I think maybe what amazed me more than anything is they have that entire road course completely transformed back to the oval, and the cars going the other direction the very next day. So
that's amazing,
you know,
and I didn't know how that was going to work, but that was amazing that they were able to do that in less than 24 hours. That was really cool, and that has a lot of promise for some neat things. You can let your mind wander a little bit down the road, maybe of a NASCAR weekend or just anything really. Just being able to turn the track around that quickly, that has some exciting possibilities.
Right, and just amazing how far this track has come over the years. Well, certainly one thing is for sure, they're back on the oval now, and they're going the right direction now. And but they've just not been able to get very much practice in. Unfortunately, Mother Nature has won the races, per se, to get cars out there. Now, yesterday we had, well, I won't call it a fast Friday, but we had some fast speeds, and certainly IndyCar allowed the cars to put a little bit more power in it yesterday, to see what they could get out of them, and we did. We saw 230. We saw Ed Carpenter hit 230, and everybody was excited when Elio Castroneves comes out. I mean, Juan Pablo Montoya, I'm sorry, comes out with 229, and then not long after that, we saw Elio Castroneves, Scott Dixon, we had a couple others there. I don't have my notes right here in front of me, but basically we saw speeds pretty fast, and especially for the fact that we didn't even have anything to like 2:30 quarter 3, and it was shut down within an hour. And not too long after that, Indianapolis Motor Speedway said that all the events at the track yesterday had concluded. So that brings us to today and qualifying for the Indianapolis 500, and we got a whole different set of rules, and a long what used to be bump day is no longer the bump day, and we'll get into the parameters of the rules. But basically, the cars get out there. They say 33 fast cars. Well, there's 33 entries, so it's the Indianapolis 500. You're going to have 33 cars start, and then they're going to go from the top nine, and then they're also going to award points in a qualifying type scenario, which is new for IndyCar as well. So a lot to digest. Matt, but I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Help us understand all the new rules that are going on in qualification this weekend at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Well, and I want to be fair here. I'm rarely critical of the Speedway and what they do, but I've got to say they way overcomplicated this. I think the idea was to make sure there's action on the track in years where we don't have bumping, and I think they're going to succeed in that, though. I could see long periods of non-qualifying time, which would turn into practice time, especially after the weather we had this week. But that being said, my soapbox I'll get down from. what we're going to see today is the top 30 locked into position. So every car, all 33 driver and car combinations, and there, I'll let a little secret out. There is the slightest, ever slightest chance of a 34th driver and car combination, but it's going to take a near miracle for it to come together. And last I heard on Friday is that it was nearly a dead deal, but we'll see if it can't be revived once we see later today. But the top 30 are locked into position after the end of the day. Also, the top nine is locked into position for the fast nine tomorrow afternoon when qualifying is completed. So what they will do tomorrow, the 33 qualified drivers will have an opportunity to go ahead and put themselves in order of positions 10 through 33. Now, there is still the possibility of bumping tomorrow. Positions 30 through 33 are not locked in. I should say 31, 32, and 33 are not locked in. Those three positions are still open tomorrow. So if someone has a faster speed than one of those three times, they can bump out of the field, bump the 31, 32, or 33rd starter out of the field and get themselves in, and then themselves be bumped three qualifying attempts like we've been used to these last few years on what used to be known as bump day. And then at the end of the day tomorrow, we'll see the top nine shootout, which has been very popular. It's going to be earlier in the day. I don't know what that's going to do for speeds. I'm very curious to see if that affects speeds positively or negatively. We're going to have a nice weekend here, but generally what's really helped is that top nine shootout's been towards the end of the day, whether it be 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening when the track's cooled back down. We're going to be in the warm part of the day this time, so I'll be curious to see what that does. But in a nutshell, today we're seeing the top 30 locked in, and beyond that we'll go hopefully bumping tomorrow, but if nothing else, we'll get the starting lineup set for the Indianapolis 500.
Well, absolutely. And yesterday, in spite of the rain, and we could still say it was a fast Friday, because anytime you get a car's going 230 miles an hour around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that's fast, and it was Friday. So we could say it was a successful fast Friday. You know, let's talk a little bit about the entry list. And, of course, we know we have 33 drivers. One of the drivers that are going to stand out that we're going to be able to see, the Pennzoil number 3 old Rick Mears car, the Yellow Submarine, is going to be out there for nostalgic purposes as well. So talk with me about Elio Castroneves. Of course, he's turned speeds at 227.166 this week, 229 yesterday. So he's definitely going to be right there. Got a day good car.
Well, you know, I thought this year we would have had a real good chance to see a four-time winner, whether it be Dario or Elio Castroneves. Now, what we don't know quite yet is if the Honda cars, and when I say that, I mean the Dixon and those guys, they've been able to come up big race day these last few years. So that'll be really interesting to see if they get that extra fuel mileage and that's able to help them on race day. But as far as pure speed goes, very hard to bet against Team Penske. Will Power has seemed to found his way around this oval, too. He's my dark horse pick for the pole tomorrow evening, or I should say tomorrow afternoon. But Elio has got every chance in the world. As they always like to say, he knows his way around the track. He's got his line picked out. I would be shocked if he's not starting in the front row, and then he'll have every chance to go out and be the first four-time winner in, what, since 1992, is that right? Or 1991, so it's been a while.
I believe you are right on that, sir. I don't know. I'm going to have to Google that.
Either 90 or 91, but it's been quite a while since we've seen that, and I think it's possible we could see it this year, and that would be, of course, that would be very exciting. And you've got to love the livery of the car. I mean, that's just outstanding. The Pennzoil car, there's several really cool liveries this year. But that one has got to be a fan favorite, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of cheering for that car as it makes its way around the track these next 2 days.
Well, and absolutely. And you know, another driver, talking about fan favorites, Pippa Mann in the pink car, what she's doing for breast cancer and the Susan G. Coleman organization as well, and race with Pippa, and a great opportunity. For every lap that she turns, you could donate a certain amount of money. So basically you could pay for every lap that she turns, and all of that money goes to the race for the cure, obviously for breast cancer. But so outside of seeing a pink car out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway driven by a very good driver, Pippa Mann, it's exciting to see her back on the track. It's been a couple years since she's been out there and been able to get in a car and get a team together, and it looks like this is going to be a one-shot, one deal for her. But never say never in IndyCar. So if she comes out there and she gets a top five finish, is there going to be a team owner saying, hey, Pippa, we got a ride for you?
Well, I think Dale Coyne is a possibility. I mean, I think, yeah, when you get into the money, which I believe is top five in Indianapolis now, when you start to separate yourself, and if she were able to somehow, through it be skill or luck or fuel, be in the top three, then yes, I think you would see her for some additional races, if nothing else, the ovals with Dale Coyne. I think another guy that would be interesting to see, and he's got every chance to win this race with the equipment that he's in, is Townsend Bell. He's a guy that just does this by itself, but, you know, he's got an excellent chance to have a very nice finish. And you have to wonder if a top three wouldn't propel him in to some more ovals this year. It's a little different situation for Townsend Bell. I mean, he's he's done the whole series before, so this is really kind of, you don't want to say farewell because he's a young man still, but he's towards the end of his racing career, in an IndyCar at least. So it's a little different than Pippa, who's still trying to establish herself. But you have to wonder if a Townsend Bell had a high finish, or even a J.R. Hildebrand, if he had a top three finish, would Ed Carpenter pay his freight for a little bit further in the season? I think that would be another one to keep your eye on, too. So there are several very intriguing one-offs that can be very competitive in this race.
We have five rookies in the field of 33. And one rookie stands out to me a lot, and I've been watching him all week in practice, and that is Mikael Ashlin. I probably am butchering name wrong.
Diggity dog.
And then we've got a couple others. Another one that stands out, Jack Hawksworth, who hit the wall during practice earlier this week. Martin Plowman and James Davison, and also Carlos Hutos. Man, I was doing good. I was on a roll there, buddy. I was on a roll. Jack Hawksworth, man, not a problem. But anyway, the rookie class, 2014.
That's the way to go.
That's right. The rookie class 2014, any stands out there? I really do like this kid from Russia.
I do, too. Now, we're, of course, talking about the full-time IndyCar drivers, but I think he's got a future. Jack Hawksworth, proven he can drive these cars. I mean, he's going to have a real long future in this. But I got to tell you, I think the favorite for Rookie of the Year is none other than Kurt Busch. I mean, he's going to have an excellent chance, and I left him out in the one-offs. He's going to have an excellent chance to have a great day next Sunday, and I think at the end, through qualifying and finish, I think he's probably going to be your Rookie of the Year, is my guess. And we kind of have forgotten about that story a little bit with the rain and everything else, but he's been very quick. He's been right with the rest of the Andretti drivers,
mm-hmm.
He's got good equipment. So you have to consider him, maybe not necessarily as a dark horse even favorite to win the race, because it's so hard for a rookie to do it. And he certainly has the racing experience necessary, but the experience in that car on that track is a whole other story. But you have to look at him as the, I think, odds-on favorite at this point to win Rookie of the Year, barring out an early incident in next Sunday's race.
Which has been known to happen at the Indianapolis 500,
sure,
with rookies. Now, and Kurt Busch, and I didn't leave him out of the rookie equation. I guess what I meant to I could have included him as a rookie because he is a rookie at IndyCar, but he certainly is no rookie at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and he's going to be running the double, and that's not been done. Only a select few has even attempted to do that, and for very good reason, obviously. And he's literally going to get out of a car, get in a helicopter, and fly down to Charlotte, get in a car, and run another race. That is just stupidity, for one. But for two, that's just takes some amazing skill. And with just the focus, the mental focus that you have to drive a race car at 200-some miles an hour around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that in itself is enough to wear anybody out. And then to get out and then run a completely different race, you've got to know that your mind, it takes some time to adjust, and you got to wonder, wait, am I in Charlotte? Am I in IndyCar? Or those things.
I tell you what, I think this all became a lot easier for Kurt Busch when he won a race already. He's not locked into the chase in the Sprint Cup at this point, but boy, he's darn close by winning that race. And I think that makes things a little bit easier for him, is my guess. He has a backup driver in Charlotte. I wouldn't be at all stunned if he has a great finish in the race, if maybe he doesn't start the race in Charlotte. And when I say great finish, I mean one of the top three finishes. I think that would be the only way he'd probably stick around for any kind of post-race celebration. And if he won the race, well, that would be a story that we'd talk about for years and years to come. But the mental focus and physical athleticism that beat takes. I mean, you've heard the stories about John Andretti and Tony Stewart needing IVs and all that. I mean, it's a major undertaking, and I know that in my svelte shape, I couldn't pull it off.
There's no way I could either. I couldn't even get in a two-seater, probably.
Well, I tell you what, I did it about 2 years ago. It was a struggle.
Well, we're talking with Matt Hicks from 1070 The Fan here in Indianapolis, local affiliate for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, MRN, and of course it's going to be 1070 is going to be broadcasting the Indianapolis 500 local here in Indianapolis, and I think you can hear it on the radio, but you can't watch it on TV. So, you know, but I think you'll watch it later on in the day. We've only got you here for just a few more minutes here, but by the end of this weekend, we're going to know who 33 cars are. We're going to know where they lie at. We're going to know that they've qualified, and we're going to know what position that they are in. First things first, you mentioned that there might be a 34th car. That deal hasn't come together, but what deal were you referring to particularly?
Well, Catherine Legg's been walking around, and she seems to have something, at least a little bit brewing, but I don't think it's enough to get anything taken care of, at least for a legitimate shot at a ride. Obviously, EJ Viso's been around this month filling in for Hinchcliffe, and he would be available to someone if they were interested. Outside of those two, I don't see it for anybody else. I'm sure there's more drivers around. I know I haven't been around this month as much as I usually am, so I haven't had my annual talks with some of our favorites that come around every month looking for a ride with helmet bag in hand. But
ready to go.
This doesn't sound like we're going to see that same list of usual suspects that are ready to go for a ride, because it takes money to do this, and the reality of it is there's not a lot of money floating around right now.
Well, a couple of local stories I wanted to just get your thoughts on here before we let you go. Obviously, we're based here in Indianapolis, and a couple of stories. One, the Pacers, it's the Pacers beat the Heat again. Nobody thinks it's going to happen. The other thing we found out yesterday that Robert Mathis is going to be suspended for 4 games because of performance-enhancing drugs. He says it was because he was trying to get his wife pregnant. Turns out she is pregnant. But nonetheless, a man that smart in the league today did not bother to consult with attorneys or the players' union or the rule book or anything like that. All he did was take the doctor's word for it. Oh, no, you'll be good to go. And he took it at face value, and he's paying a dear price for that. So we look at the Pacers and we look at Robert Mathis. What are your thoughts?
Well, let me start with Robert Mathis. We'll start the negatives out first. I've never been more disappointed to hear of a story than that. One of the top leaders of the team making such a poor decision. I really don't care for his excuse. He's paid to consult with the union and with Players Association on these very matters. So the simple fact that he didn't is just amazingly disappointing. And I want to believe that it was an honest mistake, but when you research the drug that he took, you find out that it was one that Barry Bonds allegedly took years ago. It's a known masking agent for performance-enhancing drugs. So it's just such a disappointing story. And hopefully he can learn and move on from it and, quite frankly, put it behind him and continue to lead this team, because it's never good when your leader is away from the ball club for a month. And I don't know that there could be a more – outside of Andrew Luck, I don't know if there could be a more devastating absence from this team than Robert Mathis. So it's a real shame, and just disappointing to hear too. On top of it,
right,
now the Pacers, we'll see.
We'll see. The jury's still out.
I am out of the prediction business on the Pacers. I tell you, every time I think I know what's going to happen, I don't. That being said, this should be a competitive series. I don't pretend to know what's going to happen tomorrow afternoon at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. But I will say that I expect it to be a long series. Now, whether it is or isn't, I have no idea. We'll just have to see. But I think this team has got what they wanted. They have home court advantage, and they're going to play the Miami Heat.
Well, and nobody's giving them any credit. Nobody's giving them any props. And, we'll end on this note. What did you think about?
I got to tell you, Tom, I think that's exactly what this team needs. I think when they got all the credit and when they got all the props, they played like utter dog crap. So that's exactly what they need and they deserve at this point. When they had a lead, they couldn't hold it, they couldn't handle it, and now that they are where they want to be, they should be thanking every national media member that tells them they don't have a chance to win this series, because that's when they play their best.
Well, did you – I don't know if you had a chance to watch the game. I'm sure you've seen the highlights, but did you see Paul George getting a little skirmish? No, I won't even call it – that's not even a skirmish. A battle of words, if you will, with the hecklers there. And first of all, who are these guys, you know? And I noticed security was right there. And after that big thing out in Detroit with Ron Artest, nobody's taking any chances with the Pacers anymore. But unbelievable. Paul George, and then he sits down on the bench and he's barking back and forth. I was like, oh, no, he's gonna end up paying out of the pocket if he just keeps talking. He just let it go.
But then you
saw security go over there. But I guess what I want to know is you know, we laugh about it. Okay, it was funny, ha, ha, ha. But you got to wonder, that to me showed some outward signs of how stressed out this team is.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. They struggled with the pressure. I think they have come to admit it. And David West, for the first time, admitted there have been some inner turmoil. So we finally have gotten some credence to, maybe not necessarily the crazy rumors, but at least the idea that something's going on inside that locker room and maybe it's been resolved. But, yeah, you're right. I think more so than anything, whether it be infighting or these wild, outlandish rumors you've heard, the reality of what was going on here is that they were indeed crumbling under the pressure of the number one seed in the East. And when they finally lost the lead, you thought they might play better. And then I think they tightened up because they wanted to get it back. So they got where they needed to be, and I think they realized they're lucky to be where they are.
Did Frank Vogel save his job last night?
Yeah, I heard a joke. Somebody joke that says, "Boy, Frank Vogel sure is prolonging this firing thing an awful long way."
Well, I mean, here's the thing: Larry Bird at this point has to keep him around. I've never been a subscriber to the fact that he was ever playing for his job. But
no, I wasn't either. Yeah,
certainly, you know, Larry Bird raised some eyebrows, and certainly you can't do anything with Paul George. He can play like crap because he's still going to get paid. So bottom line is the buck has to stop somewhere. It always stops with the coach. And had they have lost that series, I think we may have been having a different conversation. But I think the answer is yes, he did save his job last night.
Well, yeah, I think if you really want to, if you subscribe to the fact that it was ever in jeopardy, I think he saved it when they won game 7 against Atlanta. And then moving forward, he just solidified it. You know, what we all learned is that as we were going nuts in the Atlanta series, telling him to play Copeland more and this and that with a small lineup and then all our armchair adjustments in the second round against Washington, you know, his little philosophy of sticking with his guys does seem to pay off, doesn't it? I mean, in the end, you know, the water leveled out, and this team performed at the level they're capable of. And they've won, what, 4 of 6 here lately? So, or no, more than that, they've won six of their last 8. So I'll take that against playoff teams. Now, we can judge how worthy these playoff teams are. I think that's a fair judgment. But if they continue that pace, they're going to be fine. They may even find themselves in the NBA Finals.
Well, I certainly hope that you're right there. Matt Hicks of 1070, the Fan Local here at Indianapolis Sports Affiliate, Sports Authority here in Indianapolis. Matt, what's going on over there this week? Where can people find your work, your masterpieces, stalk you on social media, what have you?
Tonight from 9:30 to midnight on Network Indiana, I'll be with Bob Lovell reading scores and running down the qualified cars. We won't know the lineup yet, but we'll at least know who's in the race, at least as of now. From 9:30 to midnight on Network Indiana's Indiana Sports Talk. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock, well after the Pacers are over with and Eddie White's postgame show is over with, Jersey Johnny and I will have our little 2 hours to talk about not only the Pacer game, but we'll get knee-deep in this Robert Mathis mess as well.
Well, I can't wait to hear it, Matt, and I appreciate you taking some time to come on with us this morning, and we'll see how these 33 cars shake out today.
Sounds great, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Okay, are you there, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, my friend. I got everything
I need from you.
Happy
to do it. Thanks, man.
You the man, brother. If you get out to the track, man, shoot me a text. I'll come up and say hello.
I'm hoping to make it out tomorrow at some point if I can get my kids pawned off on my parents for a little while, and then we'll see about Sunday.
It's grandparents, and I'm going to tell you what, I've got a granddaughter. I would. Okay, here, give her here. Go do what you got to do. Go.
they usually are pretty cool. They're usually like, yep, here, go.
Go. See you later. Are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still doing here, yeah.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, man. We'll see you. Bye.